Spirit Blade Underground, October 21st, 2011.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Spirit Blade Underground, October 21st, 2011.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. I'm Peter Franson, the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. We're bringing you Christian sci-fi and fantasy that's unsterilized, unsafe, and unleashed on your ears and imagination. You can check out what we're doing and grab lots of cool downloads over at www.spiritblade.net. Let's get into updates.
File access. Updates.
Well, this marks, if I've done my math right, which is, it's very possible I've done it wrong, but as far as I can tell, this marks the 200th episode of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. So if you've, whether you've been here from the beginning or you're just checking the show out for the first time, thanks so much for listening. I really appreciate it. It's my pleasure to do this every week. I just look forward to gathering up all my nerdiness and stuff and putting it on the podcast every week for you guys to hear. Let's see. Well, it's another month and another behind-the-scenes video for you guys. This one features actor Christopher James Van Slyke as he records the role of Kafan for Pilgrim's Progress, Similitude of a Dream. Highlights of this video include my off-topic rant on Heath Ledger's Joker and demonstrations of my complete technical ignorance. It is a wonder that I work with computers all day. It's a wonder that I pursue something that is so technical in nature. By that I refer to audio engineering and mixing and all that kind of stuff. It's really a wonder that I even try. And you'll see kind of why as you experience my ineptitude in this behind-the-scenes video. You can check it out now at spiritblade.net/videos. It's the newest one there, spiritblade.net/videos. Well, as of today, I've got 4 hymns selected for adaptation as songs for Spirit Blade 3. They're fairly obscure, which is what I want. They have haunting or dark melodic potential, especially after I monkey with them a bit, and they fit the thematic moments of the story that they're going to be placed in, so I'm really excited about the selections there. The song count remains at 7 for Spirit Blade 3, just as it was for the first 2 installments of the trilogy, which means that more than half of the songs this time are going to at least be partially based on hymns, which I never imagined would be possible, but I'm pretty stoked about it. For one, I love bringing the wonderful texts of forgotten hymns into awareness, and for two, having an existing song provides a foundation I can build on, rather than having to create something from scratch. The net result is a significant reduction in production time for the songs and for the project as a whole. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, oh, I don't know, hymns, you know, you may have forgotten or maybe never realized how many of the songs and which songs in Dark Ritual were based on hymns, if you're not a hymn fan. For a little perspective, the songs based on hymns in Spirit Blade Dark Ritual were Hour of Trial, Lead Me, and Death Come Quickly. And if you hated all those songs, well, then maybe you are out of luck for Spirit Blade 3. But hope you liked how most of those songs turned out, and you'll like what I have planned for the way I'm going to use these obscure, cool, dark hymns in Spirit Blade 3. On the show today, I'm pleased to give you guys Professor Allen's review of The Omen Machine, which is the new fantasy novel by Terry Goodkind. I'm a big fan of Terry Goodkind, so I loved getting this review. And then also my review of Batman Year One, the animated direct-to-video release. I'm reviewing the Blu-ray version of that release. And also there's a big announcement that I've decided to put out there, just in recognition of the 200th episode of the podcast, a big announcement at the end of the show about a new kind of product that Spirit Blade Productions plans to release in the first half of 2012. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, let's get this other stuff going.
Book review. Movie review.
This is Professor Allen from the Alan's Eyes and Ears blog, eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com. And I have a review for the Spirit Blade Underground on Terry Goodkind's latest novel, The Omen Machine. In 2007, Terry Goodkind released Confessor, the last part of a terrific three-book arc that wrapped up the epic 11-novel Sword of Truth series. At that point, he indicated that he wanted to move away from fantasy and into more modern-day novels. This he did with the thriller The Law of Nines, released in 2009. And although it did take place in modern times, there are many Easter eggs for fans of the Sword of Truth books, and the novel is indeed in some way connected to the previous saga. For whatever reason, Goodkind has returned to his fantasy roots with his latest novel, The Omen Machine. It is referred to on the cover as a Richard and Kayla novel. The fact that it's not branded a Sword of Truth novel specifically does speak to the differences that this book has from its predecessors. But first, similarities. Without spoiling prior novels, this does take place shortly after the events of Confessor and involves many of the surviving cast of characters from that and prior novels. The writing style is classic Goodkind, lots of descriptions, some speechifying, and his objectivist philosophy woven into the narrative. The story of the novel is this. The people of one of the lands under Richard and Kaelin's rule believe that prophecy should be used to directly guide people's lives, while Richard and Kaelin believe differently about the role of prophecy based on their experiences and understanding of how the gift works. A series of tragic prophecies delivered to ungifted people quickly come to pass, and the discovery of a heretofore unknown machine hidden cunningly inside the palace that delivers these same omens brings nothing but confusion and distress upon our heroes. Is this a new manifestation of the gift? Are people somehow being manipulated via this machine to bring forth predictions? Are these even real prophecy at all, or are these dark predictions being used as covers for murder and treachery? Well, on to the differences between this work and prior Richard and Kaelin stories. As interesting as the questions raised by this plot are, the tale operates on a much less grand scale. It's also surprisingly short. The Sword of Truth series consisted of 600 to 700 page doorstops, while this one checks in at around 400. This is average length, maybe slightly above average for, say, a modern thriller, but this is much shorter than most epic fantasies. Perhaps that's the most striking difference. It is a fantasy novel, certainly, but not an epic fantasy. The geography of the novel, the time frame of the novel, the stakes for the characters, the literal size of the novel, all much smaller than one expects from a fantasy work, certainly from a fantasy work penned by Terry Goodkind. But I imagine it was these type of changes that prompted the branding decision to refer to this book simply as a Richard and Kayla novel. To talk in terms that are used more often in movies and comic books, this novel can be considered a soft reboot of the series, a good jumping-on point for readers who find the combined 7,000 pages of The Sword of Truth a little intimidating. This is not to say that these changes make the book unenjoyable. As a matter of fact, I thought it quite good, certainly more appealing to me than Goodkind's attempt to go mainstream, The Law of Nines. There's something to the shorter form that moves the plot along at a good place, while not skimping on the character moments and interactions that are fan favorites. The villain of the work was interesting, and a type of magic was at work here that we haven't seen before in this world. That was good to see. There are indications of a villain behind the villain, pulling the strings, which certainly does lay the groundwork for this to be merely the kickoff of another series of novels from Goodkind set in the worlds of Dahara and the Midlands. I'm not going to use Pater's scale specifically in scoring the novel, but I would rate it high both in terms of quality and in terms of veracity, to use a term from the early days of the podcast. Pater, keep up the good work. You do a great job on the site and the podcast. I'm a big fan. Take care.
Very cool review, Professor Allen. Thank you so much for sending that in and for your patience and me getting it on the show. I love playing your guys' stuff. I've been getting just some great stuff from you guys. Keep sending it in. Awesome. I'm definitely excited about that new Good Kind book. But this week I was excited about something else as well. The new DC animated movie that DC's Warner Brothers been putting out a bunch of animated movies about their main property superheroes for a number of years now. And the latest is an adaptation of Frank Miller's Batman Year One. Now, for a little bit of background, in 1986, DC published Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns, which arguably reestablished Batman as a grim and gritty character and influenced the way Batman stories were told forever after. Well, 1 year later, DC hired Miller to retell Batman's origin in a story entitled Batman Year One. Now, unlike The Dark Knight Returns, this story was part of official DC Universe continuity and even further established the dark tone that this well-known character is now defined by. Year One served as source material for a number of great comic book stories. The Long Halloween, which is one of my favorite Batman stories, that comes to mind. It was kind of a sequel to Batman Year One. And if you haven't read it, I would highly recommend it if you enjoy Batman Year One, either the original comic book, or if you enjoy this animated movie, go check out Batman The Long Halloween. Tim Sale and Jeff Loeb, I think, are the guys that did that. Anyway, so Batman Year One served as source material for a number of great comic book stories, and it was drawn from heavily in Christopher Nolan's Batman Begins movie. Now, the DC animated studios have just turned their attention to Batman Year One, to remake it, and they've set out to create an animated version of this iconic story. And I am pleased to report that they succeeded wonderfully. The character-driven story is what really sells this movie so well for me. Surprisingly, for those who haven't read the original comic, this story is more about James Gordon than it is about Bruce Wayne. Not a ton more. I mean, there's plenty of cool Batman stuff. But this is really Gordon's story. Gordon has just transferred to Gotham with the rank of police lieutenant and is having to survive as an honest cop amidst a corrupt police force. His stance for honesty and justice put both himself and his family in danger. And his only ally may just be the vigilante he's trying to capture. Now, if that story sounds familiar because of Batman Begins, it's even more focuses on Gordon and what he had to deal with as a new honest cop in this completely corrupt system. So if you enjoyed those elements in Batman Begins, do yourself a favor and check out the source material it came from in the original comic book Batman Year One. Anyway, back to this adaptation. Meanwhile, Bruce Wayne is discovering his calling and what it really takes to fight crime in Gotham City. This is Batman well before he becomes the seasoned veteran with a plan for every situation. He makes mistakes and suffers the consequences, resulting in injuries he's forced to suffer through and these kind of back-to-the-wall situations that he has to think his way out of on the fly. With Zack Snyder's Watchmen being the only exception, I think DC's animated version of Batman Year One is the single most faithful adaptation of specific comic book pages to the screen. Fans of the comic will recognize numerous panels that have been brought to life directly from the pages of the comic book, though with a cleaner look and a few more colors added to the palette. The cast performances were solid, though not perfectly suited to the project. Miller and Frank Miller and artist David Mazzucchelli captured the grim despair of noir. The original comic had lots of noir sensibilities to it. And though this film aims to retain that same feel, the first-person voiceovers representing the thoughts of James Gordon and Bruce Wayne have a little too much inflection from time to time, I think. I also thought that the voice of Batman, while appropriately young-sounding given the age of the character in this story, was having to try a little too hard to achieve that natural, guttural sound that makes, I think, the best Batman voices work. The animation and lines are beautiful on Blu-ray, and the character of Gotham City deserved its own credit. The original artwork was clearly the basis for the visual design, and with just a few enhancements, the original visuals translate wonderfully. The runtime is once again pretty short, at only 64 minutes. That's got to be one of the shortest ones yet that's been of these DC animated movies. But it's more than enough time to tell this story and tell it well. And the numerous great features on the Blu-ray, including creator commentary, roundtable with current Batman creative staff, a documentary on the original comic, a Catwoman short feature, and more, all that easily makes up for, I think, for any perceived brevity in the main feature. Now, although it may not lead to conversation after watching the movie, a major theme in James Gordon's story is doing the right thing even when it hurts. Gordon is a flawed man, but he strives for most of the movie to make the right decisions, despite the pain it brings him. When contrasted with the modern pop philosophy of do what feels right, or follow your heart, which we see different iterations of that in movie scripts all the time, in contrast to that, Gordon's pursuit of honesty and justice is refreshing and inspiring, whether it impacts the entire city or just his relationship with his wife. For those interested in an introduction to the Batman comics mythos who aren't quite ready to flip through an actual comic book, this is as good as it gets, people. A solid, serious representation of Batman with a grounded, human story that even many non-genre fans will appreciate. It's rated PG-13 for violence and some sexual material. I give it a 9.0 out of 10 when it comes to quality, and relevance, 7.5 out of 10. If you want to decode those scores and see what all that means when I give you those numbers, go over to spiritblade.net/review scores, and you can get an explanation of how my review system works. Now, if you'd like to join the Spirit Blade Underground by contributing a review, news, or other geekiness of any kind, join the ranks of those that have already begun sending me stuff and I've enjoyed playing on the show, send me a written email or a recorded audio file. You can send it to Pater, P-A-E-T-E-R, at spiritblade.net to get it on this podcast. You can also record your content for me to play on the show easily by calling 206-350-1226. That's the same number I put out there for you guys to leave me messages. But if you don't have the means to record, you know, like you don't have a microphone on your computer, but you want to like share a review or just some thoughts on geekiness or whatever, whatever's on your mind, use the phone number there, and you can deliver your content easily that way. I would love to get you guys involved in the show as much as you want to be.
Are you just watching?
Do you enjoy watching movies? The cool effects, the interesting characters, the explosions.
Yeah, you like the explosions, admit it.
Well, we do too.
But sometimes it pays to approach Hollywood media with a healthy dose of critical thinking.
Join me, Daniel Lewis.
And Eve Franklin.
As we discuss our favorite movies.
And share critical thinking for the entertained Christian.
So visit areyoujustwatching.com to subscribe.
And don't just watch.
The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word of our God stands forever.
Today we're searching for truth in the book of Romans, chapter 15. We're looking at verses 20 through 33. I'm going to read that from the ESV translation of the Bible, which reads, "And thus I make it my ambition to preach the gospel, not where Christ has already been named, lest I build on someone else's foundation. But as it is written, those who have never been told of him will see, and those who have never heard will understand. This is the reason why I have so often been hindered from coming to you. But now, since I no longer have any room for work in these regions, and since I have longed for many years to come to you, I hope to see you in passing as I go to Spain and to be helped on my journey there by you once I have enjoyed your company for a while. At present, however, I am going to Jerusalem, bringing aid to the saints. For Macedonia and Achaia have been pleased to make some contribution for the poor among the saints at Jerusalem. For they were pleased to do it, and indeed they owe it to them. For if the Gentiles have come to share in their spiritual blessings, they ought also to be of service to them in material blessings. When therefore I have completed this and have delivered to them what has been collected, I will leave for Spain by way of you. I know that when I come to you, I will come in the fullness of the blessing of Christ. I appeal to you, brothers, by our Lord Jesus Christ and by the love of the Spirit, to strive together with me in your prayers to God on my behalf, that I may be delivered from the unbelievers in Judea, and that my service for Jerusalem may be acceptable to the saints, so that by God's will I may come to you with joy and be refreshed in your company. May the God of peace be with you all. Amen." Paul's ambition was to share the truth of the gospel, in other words, who Christ is, what he has done for us, and what it means for our lives. He wanted to share that with people who had never heard that Jesus is the Messiah. He didn't want to build on another person's work, but start a completely new missionary effort. We see that in verse 20. Paul quotes Isaiah 52:15, a prophecy about the Messiah, and sees his own work as a partial fulfillment of that prophecy. That's from verse 21. This specific focus for Paul meant that his travel plans must also be very specific geographically. As a result, he wasn't able to visit the Christians in Rome before this time, although he had really wanted to. We see that in verses 22 and 23. At the time he wrote this letter, however, his work in the areas far from Rome was over. He was now planning to go to Spain and to visit Rome on the way in hopes of gaining their support for his work, using them as a sort of hub, you might say, for his ministry in Spain, while also spending some time with them. We see that in verses 23 and 24. Before this, however, he was headed for Jerusalem. Now, at this time, the Christians in Jerusalem were suffering some of the worst persecution, resulting in serious financial hardships. The Christians in Macedonia and Achaia, mostly Gentiles, had collected money to send to them, and Paul was planning to deliver it himself and then head on to Spain through Rome. And we see that in verses 25 and 26, and also in 28. Although these Gentile Christians were happy to give to the Jerusalem Christians, Paul, interestingly, also points out that in the bigger picture, it was really their obligation, since they came to know Christ through Jewish Christians. The eternal, infinite blessings they had as a result were far greater than any material wealth that they could share. So at the very least, it made sense for them to help the Jewish Christians in Jerusalem financially. We see that in verse 27. Developing this kind of eternal economy in our minds is, I think, vital to living life the way we're meant to. This theme has been haunting me recently, and I see it as the key to effectively living for God. It's so easy to only see our little day-to-day lives and whether or not we are experiencing pleasure in any given moment. The more we understand and put our hope in the amazing eternal future that's ahead of us, the more we will be able to sacrifice our selfishness and make eternal investments in that future today, in the way we prioritize love of God and practical love for others over pursuit of self-satisfaction. Paul wasn't just planning to make use of the church in Rome. He was looking forward to doing ministry there as well, and anticipated being empowered by Christ in a special way when he came to them. We see that in verse 29. So he wasn't just kind of using them with his own agenda. Paul's target demographic, it may have been those who have never heard of Christ, but he didn't allow that focus to give him tunnel vision and miss opportunities to love and minister to anyone else he came across. He looked forward to blessing the Jewish Christians in Jerusalem, and he anticipated being useful to the Christians in Rome as well. Paul was not so focused on the mission God had given him that he missed opportunities to serve God in his everyday encounters and what we might call peripheral agenda items. Paul asked for prayer for his protection from unbelievers in Judea who had been persecuting Christians, and for his work in delivering and possibly organizing distribution of funds in Jerusalem. He was asking for prayer that that would be effective. We see that in verses 30 and 31. It's also interesting to note that although delivering these funds was somewhat of a side mission when compared to his desire to preach the gospel to those who've never heard it, Paul was still highly emotionally invested in it. I mean, he anticipated a sense of real joy for himself if his work in delivering the funds went well. We see that in verse 32. So Paul was not a lone ranger, and he recognized the value in being refreshed by others. We see that in verse 32. Sometimes those of us who are visionaries, I'm speaking of myself here, who prefer to work alone rather than risk others interfering, we can neglect spending time with other believers. Or we can neglect the believers that are part of our lives, you know, our families built into our lives right around us. But even Paul knew that this work that God has given us to do isn't meant to be done alone. Now, at this point, Paul closes the main portion of his letter with a brief customary wish prayer, praying that God's peace would be detectable among them, the Christians in Rome, in a special way. As you might remember, the church in Rome was composed of both Jews and Gentiles, and the mix in cultures had led to some disagreement, which some of the book of Romans deals with. In this wish prayer, Paul may be once again expressing a desire for them to live peacefully together as believers. Maybe, I'm not sure, but I pull that from verse 33. Next, we're going to see a testimony to Paul's relationships as he begins to close this letter. The Coffee House question this week, when do you have trouble keeping an eternal economy in mind? What have you found useful as you try to see life with an eternal perspective? For me, I have trouble keeping an eternal economy in mind when I, as I kind of alluded to before, have this vision that I believe is God-given, and I get so excited about that vision that I get tunnel vision for it. I just focus in, and then I start adding things that God I don't think intends, and this, like, in other words, pressures of, like, timetables, and oh, I have to do this by this point, and this by this point, and da-da-da. If my life is going to have meaning, I have to accomplish in this time frame. And so I can really, when I'm in go mode, being creative, or I have an ambition or an agenda, those kinds of things can really keep me from having the right eternal economy that I believe I'm supposed to have in mind. What I've found useful, especially recently as I've returned to it, is meditating on Scripture. I kind of go in cycles. Sometimes study is really important for me. I need to just do really clinical kind of study that feeds the intellect, because that often excites me about who God is. As I learn more about who He is, how He works in the world, and study kind of deep theology, or as I study apologetics, that kind of bolsters my faith, and I realize, you know, this is not just this thing I'm wanting to be true and plugging my ears and not listening to reality, but this is really real, you know. So there's seasons where I need that. I've been in a season where I really needed that. But then there are also seasons, as I'm coming back into now, where I just need to meditate on Scripture. And for me, what that looks like is taking just kind of a segment of Scripture, you know, that I, you know, go through on a regular basis. You know, I don't want to say like a chapter a day to keep the devil away, but that's what I have been doing, a chapter specifically a day, but not just to read it, but to read through it and then say, okay, think about this in the context of my life. How can I apply what God is doing in this passage, or saying in this passage? How can I apply that to how I've spent my time today, or how I view my life right now, you know? And so that has helped me, as I've returned to that lately, get more of that kind of eternal perspective and be a little bit more willing to sacrifice my agenda, sacrifice my time, and prioritize loving others, particularly my family, as that's what it's looked like lately, is giving more time to my family. So anyway, I'd love to get your thoughts on that question. You can email me. I can read your thoughts on the show, or leave me a message, 206-350-1226, that I can play on the show, or start up a conversation at our forums, spiritblade.net/forums. There's a whole section there called Seeking Truth, where folks often bring up coffeehouse questions, so you can launch the conversation on this one. I'd love to hear from you.
Incoming transmission.
Hey, Peter, it's John. Just wanted to give you a call on your request for opinions about whether or not you should do audiobooks or audio dramas. Here's what I think. You should do whatever is going to make you money, dude, so that you can support your family and support your small company and make and turn a profit. So that's my opinion. So if it's going to be audiobooks, it's audiobooks. If it's audio drama, it's audio drama, whatever. You produce some great stuff, so keep up the great work. Bye.
Hey, Peter, this is Shane. I just wanted to offer you some feedback on the reviews that you're having. And that Deep Space Nine review was pretty much the most rad thing I've heard. I've often wondered kind of how the series went, and I'm working my way through the series now. And it was kind of cool to have that review there to give a synopsis. So thanks. Talk to you later. Pass on my thanks to the person who did that for you, too. Thanks.
Well, first off, John, thanks for kind of the feedback there. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I definitely want this company to succeed, and I want to look for opportunities to make that happen. At the same time, you know, I don't want to sell out. You know, I don't want to, you know, just go mainstream and neglect kind of what you guys are into. You know, I mean, I'm really the more mainstream I go, the more, you know, at some point I'm at risk of kind of losing sight of the geek crowd, the nerd crowd, and those are the people that I most care about. I want to welcome everybody into enjoying what we're doing, but my passion is for geek and nerd culture, so I want to be sure that if I go into something like audiobooks, that's going to be part of, you know, your guys' pulse as well. So far the feedback I've been getting has been really good. The basic message I'm hearing is, hey, Peter, go for it, as long as you don't set aside or in significant ways hinder your work with audio drama. Then absolutely go for it. So I think that's really going to that really kind of affirms the thoughts I have been having, and I think will influence, you know, what kind of decisions I make as new opportunities come around. So, let's see, what else am I forgetting? Shane, yeah. Thank you. I didn't want to jump in next week already. But Shane, yes, thanks. I'm glad you enjoyed the DS9 thing. That was all Matt who did that. So thank you again, Matt, for the DS9 review. See, that's what's really cool about having you guys more involved is, you know, I because of my interests, I'm only going to scratch particular itches. And a review of DS9, as much as I enjoyed the show when it was on, that's not an itch I would have scratched. So awesome. Thanks. Just an invitation again for any and all of you guys to get involved on any level you want to with creating content that we can that I can share here on the podcast. Somewhat along those lines, I got an email from Ken H this week. I almost forgot. Sorry, I meant to play those messages, John and Shane, last week. I might have even gotten this email from Ken last week too. And last Friday was like a crazy day at the end of a crazy week, and I totally spaced on putting your guys' thoughts on the show. So I'm really sorry. I'm glad I finally got around to doing it this week. Anyway, so Ken H. writes, "First, I will say I like audiobooks. I drive for a living and don't get to read as much as I would like. There are several podcasts that read stories, and I love them. The one I think is the best is Forgotten Classics. Right now, she's doing the Book of Genesis and a book called The Bridge of Birds. She reads complete books, just like it was an audiobook. I like reading the book. My imagination is such that I can supply the sounds, sights, and sometimes even smells of the world the writer creates. Next, I like audiobooks. I don't have a lot of time to read anymore. I really like the audiobooks that have different voices for the different people. Next, I like audio drama. Then comes movies. So if I were to vote, it would be for audiobooks. Your podcast sounds like it is going down a road that is being traveled more and more. You want audience participation. There's a podcast you should have a listen to. It is called Starship Sofa. He has many different people doing different segments on the show. He calls his show an audio magazine. He also has short fiction and main fiction. You don't want that, I think. Listening to the show may give you some ideas for your show. Just a thought. Ken H." Ken, awesome. Yeah, it's interesting, kind of the audio magazine concept. Who knows what's going to... I mean, that's not like this ambition specifically that I have. I'm just kind of letting you guys determine what the listener involvement is going to be. I'd love to have you guys as involved as you want to be. You know, this podcast is going to happen if nobody ever sends me anything to use on the show. But at the same time, I'm willing to have it be shaped by you guys that are listening to it. So, that's interesting. I like that phrase, audio magazine. Interesting kind of concept. All right, what else? Okay, well, next week I've got I don't want to say it's an audio book, but it's in the style. It's a short story, but I'm presenting it in audiobook format, enhancing it with some music and things, and hopefully you guys will dig that. But it's got kind of a vampire werewolf theme, so I'm going to have that for you next week on the show to kind of coincide a little bit with Halloween. But now the big announcement, and this is not like a formal announcement, so I'm probably going to stumble through kind of describing this. There'll be more details that I'll spoon out on a semi-regular basis as time progresses. But what I wanted to let you guys know about right now is that in the spring, I plan to release a new product. It's going to be a card game. The title is going to be Spirit Blade: The Adventure Card Game. It's not a collectible card game, and it's not primarily a competitive game. It's an adventure card game where one or more of you control members of the Liberation, kind of taking on some of the similar roles that you would hear in the audio drama. So you've got your shifters, you've got your prophets like David, who can suddenly, you know, the wrath of God just busts out of them. You got Tex like Ran. You even got shock troopers that have kind of turned from the dark over to the Liberation. And you've got characters like the Shaden Assassin that you can take on. So if you kind of listen to the Spirit Blade audio dramas and imagine each of those kind of main players The song Toffee would be another one that you could kind of put into their own kind of character class, if you will. Well, you're going to get a chance to do that, to take on those kinds of roles and go on missions for the liberation, to reclaim truth that has been stolen away by Atlantis and the Shada. I'm really excited about it. It's been something that I've been, the concept of doing a game I've had in my mind for a long time, but it just kind of started falling into place in the last few months. And I'm very excited. I'm excited to give you guys more details about that. That's really all I'm prepared to say right now. But if you want just kind of a sneak peek at what one of the cards is going to look like, I posted the image of a card at spiritblade.net/blog. It's the same post as today. It's the October 21st, 2011 post. And it's got a picture of an enemy card there called a biomech. So in addition to having enemies and character types that you'll recognize from the audio dramas, I'm going to be expanding the mythos and bringing in new concepts. And the concept of the biomech is one of them. And the biomech, the basic concept of there is it's another attempt Atlantis is making to offer immortality to people, but it's got a dark twist to it that the Volunteers did not know they were signing on for, in similar ways to those who signed on for U-Point 2. So you can kind of get a look at that card and imagine what story might be behind that concept, the concept of the biomech. But go over to spiritblade.net/blog and check out that card and let me know what you think. Leave a comment or something, or you can email me or call and all that kind of jazz that I put out there for you guys to do. But that's it for now. Like I said, more updates coming in the coming months. I'll probably put images of cards out there, probably talk more about the rules and things like that as time goes on. But it's something I'm very excited about and happy to share with you guys on the 200th episode of the podcast. Well, before I take off here, I want to remind you guys again to mark your calendars for November 5th, 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. That's the live chat at spiritblade.net/forums. I hope to hang out with you guys there. And also, for the rest of this month, through the end of October, free shipping on t-shirts through the end of October. You might be saying, well, wait a minute, isn't shipping and stuff normally free? Yes, for everything that's in the Spirit Blade store that we actually sell out of the store. But if you go to spiritblade.net/store and go to the where it talks about the t-shirts, that actually is a link to an exterior store. It's a Spreadshirt store. And I don't handle any of the transactions there. They do all of that for me. And you do normally pay shipping there. But not this month if you use the promo code Witching Hour. One word, all caps, Witching Hour, when you check out. Free shipping on your t-shirt orders through the end of October. So if you want one of our quirky, nerdy Spirit Blade t-shirts, which I really enjoy, my wife is going to get one this month finally. Because of the free shipping. Then to go over to spiritblade.net/store, click on the link to go to the t-shirt site, and use the promo code Witching Hour, one word, all caps. And lastly, don't forget, and I'm really emphasizing it for reasons I can't go into because they are mysterious, but don't forget to sign up for our newsletter if you're not on it already. It's your monthly dose of the biggest news, discounts, hint, hint, and free content from Spirit Blade Productions, including some huge discount opportunities and giveaways not advertised anywhere else. Hint, hint, go sign up today at spiritblade.net/newsletter. That's it for this week, guys. Thank you for sticking around for the last 100, 200, or 5 or 1 episodes that you've been here for. I hope you'll stick around for 200 more. Have a great week. And let's you and I always remember to seek the truth.
Visit www.spiritblade.net. Peter is a crazy freak. Green Lantern is awesome. Visit www.spiritblade.net.